Welcome into the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. My name is Jay Catch, joined as always by Michelle Bodkin. What's up, Michelle?
You know, snow.
Surprise. That's a good point. Yeah. what month is it? Oh, it's April. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, apparently next weekend, though, I was looking at the forecast.
Like, I know. It looks great.
Mid-70s.
And it's Utah's spring game.
Yeah.
And ironically enough, it's been forever since there's been like a decent Utah spring game. So
that's
like, knock on wood that the forecast remains as is, because it would be nice to not freeze or be soaking wet at the end of that.
Watch like one random rain cloud roll in Salt Lake City that morning.
It would
park
be
itself
the luck.
Over Rice-Eccles Stadium and be like, ha ha,
take that. It would not surprise me. That's just my luck.
Well, yeah. So we got a lot to discuss on today's show. We are going to talk some Utah football. You have two exclusive one-on-ones with the contenders for the number two job at Utah.
Yeah.
Brandon Rose and Isaac Wilson. We'll get to those. We are going to be joined by former BYU linebacker Max Tooley, now pursuing his NFL dream. He worked out at the Big 12 Pro Day last week. He's guy who's been around BYU forever. He's a former Bountiful, what was then Bountiful Brave, if I'm not mistaken, then became a Red Hawk. But we will talk with him at the 11 o'clock hour, get his thoughts on how the NFL prep is going, also get some thoughts on BYU football. We'll talk some basketball, a lot to cover, as always. But let's start off the show where we always do. Do you have a highlight of the week, Michelle?
Nothing too crazy happened this week.
Hey,
so I'm not sure. Yeah, no, it's definitely not a bad thing. I don't know that anything like really stood out, but what? Well, yeah, but like it's just different when you sit and watch that on your couch. You know what I mean?
Sorry, I said Utah gymnastics in her ear. So.
Well, I was saying, it's like,
oh, sorry.
It's okay. And they advanced, right, to the regional
they did advance.
Final, right?
Yeah, so the Red Rocks will be playing on Sunday. Like I said, it was nice watching it on my couch, but it's like just so different being there in person and feeling that energy than like watching it on TV and being like, yeah, like that was a good meet. Let's go.
I can understand that. So there you go. That's good. Sarah, producing Force Behind the Glass, you heard her voice just a second ago. Sarah, what's up?
Nothing much. I will say this, at least a year ago, it popped up in my memories. We were like knee deep in snow.
True.
There was like a huge snowstorm that blew through at the beginning of April last year.
It was brutal last year, snow-wise. We've had, by the way, like banner back-to-back years. I think I was reading yesterday, it's the most snow in back-to-back years, like in terms of water content for Utah since 06-07.
Wow.
Yeah, somebody was in Taiwan where he was baking in the sun when that was happening here, so.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so it could be worse.
It could be worse.
That was
it really
my
could
point.
Be. Yeah, that was not great.
Let's hope that the weather forecast for next week holds, because that looks absolutely glorious.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. There hasn't been a lot going on for me either. Probably just getting more settled into
our new
place.
Okay.
Slowly like organizing things and like putting them in places now that we have storage for things.
Whoa.
So
concept.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I despise moving because you pack everything up, you move it all in like a rush, it feels like, and then it's like, oh, wait, I could unpack all that again?
Yeah, it's kind of the
where
worst.
It goes.
But no, it was kind of fun because we got to open all of our wedding gifts finally.
Oh, I had forgotten about this. Yeah, so you were like storing them at your in-law's place because you didn't have space for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we just didn't have the storage for
just
any
like
of it.
Christmas all over again.
And so we finally were able to like pick it up from his parents' house and bring it over. And we're like, oh my gosh, look at all this stuff we got.
Wait till you have to move again and you have to take all that with you.
This is true.
Oh, that's funny. That is actually really, really cool. All right. Highlight of my week, honestly, just outside of hanging out with my kids, my youngest son, so Landon, 6 months old, just got to 6 months, crazily enough. He's now sitting up pretty much unassisted. So it's kind of fun to be able to sit there and play with him and do his thing. So, you know, one of those dad moments. But also, I got to say, I don't know how. Did either of you watch the Final Four for the women's basketball tournament last night?
I didn't get a chance to. I saw the hoopla around UConn-Iowa.
UConn-Iowa was an incredible game. I had a great time watching it. Like, it was an incredible game. Yes, it was marred by a call that, letter of the law, it is the right call.
Right.
Moving screen, it looks textbook if you slow it down. But as everybody says, you can like Zapruder film anything and make it look. But. you know what? In the circumstance that was, it denied us what would have been, I thought, a classic finish. But hey, fun game anyways. Now we're going to see. It's going to be Caitlin Clark up against South Carolina. Now, but Caitlin Clark actually didn't play necessarily the starting role she typically does.
Yeah.
All of her teammates stepped up last night.
Well, you know what? I think that's a good thing, though, for Iowa. Like, especially at this point in time, like, it's always great when you have that superstar that can kind of carry you. But at some point in time, others do need to step up. And so it's good to see that Iowa's capable of doing that, because I think they're going to need all hands on deck against South Carolina.
Well, sure, and that's probably the best point you make, is that this is a South Carolina team that's undefeated, folks. Like, they're really good.
Well, and I mean, South Carolina's a team that you don't necessarily have the single superstar, right? Mm-hmm. You have lots of people that can step up. And so that's why, to me, when you play a team like that, that has, you know, Cardoza and like a bunch of brand name people that step up on any given night, like, it's important that Iowa is able to do the same.
Sure, and that is a very, very good point. We've got UFL action on our TV right here. Like,
so
hey,
fun.
Spring football, like, it's all happening right now.
It's all happening.
So, all right, so let's dive in. Michelle, I want to start off talking a little bit about college basketball, because the Final Four for the men is tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to lie, I tweeted this last night. I have a lot of years, I've watched a fair amount of women's basketball, like with the local teams and everything, and also mm-hmm. the men's tournament, obviously. I'm not going to lie, I've actually been more entertained by the women's tournament this year than I have been the men's tournament. And that's not to say I haven't been entertained by the men's tournament. I'm just saying the women's game with some of the stars they've had, mm-hmm. Beckers, I don't know how you say your name, for UConn.
I think it's
Beckers, right?
Oh, I was going to say, Buker. I thought it was Buker.
Anyway. Caitlin Clark, like, you just go down the list of the star players in the women's side. I think it's added a little bit of the luster to the women's side, whereas the men's side, it's more about the teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, UConn, it feels like we're all kind of living in UConn's world on the men's side of things, and they're just going to repeat because they're just so good. But it's been fun to watch both sides of this. Just give me a sense as we go into what will be the final weekend, essentially, of hoops, because we'll have the Final Four for the men tonight, which, by the way, or this afternoon, I should say. You'll be able to hear that here on the KSL Sports Zone. We'll have it from Westwood One's coverage. You'll have the women's championship tomorrow, and then Monday night, men's championship, and then boom. One shining moment, and we're done.
We're done. We're done. It's a wrap on basketball. You know, I mean, I tend to agree with you, right? And I think people were having that epiphany even last year. I remember so many comments about the women's side was just more entertaining. The mm-hmm. the men's side was kind of, like, okay, that's nice. And I think it's just kind of continued this year, because there's been even more awareness because of what they did last year. So, and again, I think we've talked about this a lot too. I think knowing the superstars helps. And it's just really hard in the men's game to know who those players are, because they mm-hmm. move around so much.
Oh,
they don't stick in one place, or they graduate and head off to the NBA so fast. So there's just not that continuity there, I don't think, on the men's side. And so I think that's why people are starting to gravitate towards the women's side, is because there is that continuity between teams, and you see the same people grow up, you know, over 4 or 5 years, and kind of morph into superstars and lead their teams. And you just don't really get that on the men's side anymore. And it's not that the games can't be entertaining, but I just think people always enjoy it a lot more when you know who you're cheering for, if that makes sense.
Well, it does. And you're right. We all, as sports fans, I think we've been so conditioned to get to know individuals and, like, fixtures on teams.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, college men's basketball in particular has become very transactional. Just kind of the nature of what the transfer portal's given us, and also NIL, like,
mm-hmm.
just what it is. And the other thing is you watch the women's game, where I'm not saying that transfer portal doesn't exist, because we've seen
it.
It absolutely does. But it's not getting the same, I don't know. It's not having 1,000 guys. I think it was in the first 3 days of the transfer portal opening the cycle, 1,000 men's basketball players entered it, and it could go upwards of 3,000 by the end of the cycle goes through. It's just the upturn and the churn of what happens in the men's game. It doesn't seem to be affecting necessarily as much on the women's side of things. Now, I can also acknowledge the women's basketball game, it's quite top-heavy. Mm-hmm. Like the best teams are the best teams.
Yeah.
And they collect the best talent. Mm-hmm. You can only point to the what Gino Auriemma built at UConn as kind of the finest example. He had 2 decades, it felt like, of almost unchallenged superiority.
Yeah.
Okay, great. But guess what? Right now, the 4 teams that were playing in the Final Four last night, all of them had, I thought, great players. By the way, it's kind of funny that we have NC State with men's and women's in the Final Four and also UConn, but that's kind of a fun thing about this. But all of them had star power. All of them had very good players, and it yielded 2 very, very good games. Now, I didn't get to watch much of the NC State matchup against South Carolina, but it sounds like South Carolina essentially in the second half said, yeah, this is over.
And yeah,
just ran away.
We're done.
Okay, great. That's a credit to what Dawn Staley's built. But then last night, watching that UConn-Iowa game, I was as entertained by that as any basketball game I've watched all season long. I'm talking men and or women.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's awesome to see that. And that there were some tweets last night like you know a sport has arrived when a large swath of Twitter is upset about a call. Well,
yeah.
Welcome to the big time women's basketball if that's the case.
That's true. And let's hope that leads to some changes to make it a little more equitable for them. That talking about how the tournament set up for them,
yes,
accommodations, that sort of thing. Like, people are watching and paying attention because it's a good product overall. And so now I think it's time to put the resources towards it to really kind of uplift it, I guess. Is that the right way to say that?
Sure, and they're doing a better job of that. They're trying to make
they are doing a better job.
They're trying to make it more equitable. That's probably the best term to use, is equitable. And notwithstanding certain politicians who believe that there was not a women's basketball bracket until last year. I don't know if you saw that pop up on social media. It's existed for a while.
Yeah.
Now, the notoriety or the fame of one bracket versus the other, okay, it still pales in comparison to the women's side versus the men's, and that's just – but it feels like the women's game is starting to pick up some momentum here, and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. We'll see where it ultimately goes, and it is going to require star power.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to continue to have the Caitlin Clarks of the world step forward and make it a watchable product.
Mm-hmm.
If it starts to get the churn that men's basketball does, where it's just nameless, faceless teams, and that sounds bad, but that's kind of what it's become. It's so transactional.
Oh, it is. Totally.
It makes it tough to buy in.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the kind of this give and take of all this. The women's game is, I think, enjoying a little bit of a renaissance in a way because of what's happening on the men's side of things. But it doesn't mean the men's has been any less thrilling. There's been some moments there, but the women's game has got this star power that they need to capitalize on it.
Yeah.
And the equity of it, like where they're more balanced. There was it 3 or 4 years ago? There was a whole weight room thing.
Yeah.
Like,
that was wild.
There's been progress made.
Yes.
And that's the positive. Still stuff to be done, but okay, the whole not having, and Sarah, did you mention this last week, the whole not having the lines on the courts drawn right up in Spokane?
Oh, my gosh.
Did you hear
it? It was in Portland.
But come on now, like, you can't have this happen. You can measure lines on a basketball court. They're all the same no matter men's. Come on.
I want to know why we're all of a sudden having, like, we have the best technology in the world. Why are we all of a sudden having such issues? Because I, like, immediately also kind of flash to, and I don't, like, I'm not picking on BYU, but, like,
sure,
BYU getting the Big 12 logo wrong on the hashes as well.
Well,
like,
okay, that one was, that was a Photoshop
error.
That was not,
it was not actually laid down in the
grass.
Okay, thank goodness.
That was just somebody who's playing around with a computer who didn't realize, hold on, I put one on the 25 and one on the 15.
Oh my gosh. Still,
sure,
like,
yeah.
Still, you know. Let's measure twice and cut once.
Yes. Sage advice from my seventh grade shop teacher that I've held on to my entire life. He's not wrong, by the way. It's absolutely the truth. It is absolutely the truth. You want to measure twice, cut once. Figure it out. Like, make sure, don't. And by the way, the fact that they played multiple games before anybody noticed this.
Picked up on that,
and
yeah.
And it was a fan that was sitting in the stands who was like,
that doesn't look right.
Puts it on Reddit, and they're like, Huh.
Let's that isn't
look.
Right.
Let's go look. Oh, it's not. Well, way to go, guys.
Oh, man.
We're doing so good here.
The NCAA has been struggling.
Sure, but here's the deal. The NCAA can't seemingly get out of its own way at any way, shape, or point. And that's both a detriment and a credit in a way.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, okay, you know what? But yeah, I'm actually stunned because there's stories about guys like Tiger Woods, like masters of the craft. There's a story about Tiger. Let's go back to the 1990s where he was given four irons of the same, like cut the same. They're his irons. He hits all four of them. He goes out to the range, hits all four of them, hands one to the guy and says, that one's heavier than the other three. And they're like, they're built the exact same, Tiger. How can you know this? They go over. It was like a gram or two off, but he could tell.
That's crazy.
And here's I bring that up to point this out. How did these women's basketball players not be like, hold on, we're not shooting as well on this end of the court. What is going on here? But I don't know. Maybe I'm just. Nonetheless, it's been fun basketball.
It has. It's
and
been good stuff.
It's fun to see college basketball, I'm talking both men's and women's, mm-hmm. getting some headlines when the NBA usually dominates it mm-hmm. in a way. Now, I will also say this. The NBA and the Utah Jazz are a perfect example of this right now. The Jazz have fallen off, and there's a real, real possibility they're going to finish the season, Michelle, the final 30 games, 3-27. They're going to lose 17, 18 straight, it looks like, if things hold currently. You know what? When that happens, guess where fan interest goes?
Oh,
elsewhere.
Yeah. And usually the college equivalent.
And that's what's happening, yeah. I think a lot of people are like, hold on, these basketball tournaments going on over here. I'm going to go check that out. And to the basketball, men's and women's college basketball credit, their side of things, they've delivered. They've delivered some really, really good performances. You've got some dominant squads on both sides, the men's and women's side of things. And we'll see where it ultimately pans out. Can Caitlin Clark finish off what is an absolutely incredible Hall of Fame worthy career tomorrow by taking down the big bad South Carolina Gamecocks?
Like, man, I don't know.
We'll see. But then on the men's thing, UConn, they got all this pressure about repeating. And there were so many people like, teams just don't repeat in men's basketball. Well, here's the thing. That UConn squad, I'm not sure anybody's slowing them down.
Well, as we talked about last week, they're one of the few teams that hasn't had a ton of turnover.
Yeah.
And I think that just illustrates the point that the product is better when you have the same faces returning for another year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not that gets ideas in people's heads like, hey, we need to like figure out how to keep our teams together for the most part and kind of, again, build and grow.
Sure.
I don't know. Like, I don't know, but like I think that's really just such a huge key to why they are where they are.
Well, and here's the thing: it's you look at it and you say, okay, here's an opportunity for these two to show what they can do. And the UConn squad, you're right; they're kind of a bit kind of like they're the antithesis of what a lot of college basketball has become, and to what they've done is, okay, well, they're looking like they're going to repeat. Now you have to go out and win tonight. You got to win Monday night. You got to prove yourself. It'll be fun. I'm interested. And trust me, I'll be watching. Like I watched last night. I'll be watching tomorrow night. And by the way, the Utah Jazz, no offense to y'all, but when you fall behind by 20 points 4 minutes into a game, click, off we go to other
Jake
things.
Hatch is not watching.
Here's the thing. It's part of the gig here.
Yes, yes.
I went dual screen, but you know where my attention went to?
The better game.
Yeah. Hi, UConn, Iowa, Caitlin Clark, let's do this thing. And Paige Becker, that's what I was watching. I'm like, check over on the basketball score on the Jazz side of things. Oh, it's 72-35. Great. Way to go, guys.
It's a slow clap.
Masterpiece of you-know-what from Will Hardy, I'm sure will be coming shortly after this one wraps up, but It's part of what we do as sports fans.
Yeah.
We want to find the entertaining stories. We want to be entertained. And PK talks about this all the time. Sports, by and large, it's an entertainment business. If you're not entertaining, bye. We're out.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of truth to that. A lot, like, my attention span, yeah. If you're not entertaining to me,
sure.
I'm not paying it. Like, I'm probably not even paying attention on social media. It's a scroll by. And that's just kind of the way it is. Now, you can also be entertaining and be a bad product as
sure.
well.
Yeah. But that doesn't happen nearly as much.
But it doesn't happen nearly as much. Exactly. That's a much harder feat to pull off.
Like, here's the thing. You can have, like, entertaining games or a moment mm-hmm. in the midst of what ultimately is like, and that's...
perfect example here.
That was a masterpiece
here.
Of dog shit.
Thank you. And
yes.
Will, you have delivered some incredible sound bites.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
Thinking about 2013 Utah football, they had the Stanford game,
sure.
and then it was a bunch of you can be bad
yep.
and still have an entertaining moment uh-huh. or two, but yeah, it's tough to do.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will take a timeout here. We'll come back. We're going to talk some football. We're going to check in with both Brandon Rose and Isaac Wilson, the two contenders for the backup job at Utah. We'll get Michelle's insights on what's happening with Utah football as they are a week out from finishing up their spring mm-hmm. camp. Maybe fit some thoughts in with BYU as well. That's all to come right here on the Saturday show, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. I know my music pretty well, sir. I do not know who this is.
This is the band Perry.
Yeah, I don't.
If I Die Young.
I know that song by them, but I couldn't have told you anybody else they have. I was doing band of the day, and I had to like pick random ones. We had Sam Hunt yesterday with DJ and PK because he's coming to Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater. And Sarah, I went through our archives because we have a pretty extensive archive, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam's been around long enough. He's got like a good decade plus at this point, it feels like. I figured
it's not enough.
I figured something would be in there.
Nothing.
So YouTube became my best friend yesterday. Let's just put it that way. But yeah, the band Perry. All right. I knew that. Yeah, I know If I Die Young, but everything else, nope. So welcome back, Michelle, Jake. We're along for the ride. Let's talk some Utah football. Now, the Utes are in the final week-ish mm-hmm. of spring camp. They will have three more practices next week. Is that right? Is that three left?
I believe so.
They haven't won today, and then I would assume so.
I would assume okay. as well.
Okay. But give me your sense. You guys have been given an opportunity, similar to what we did at BYU, and I spent, I think, 10 of the 15 practices at BYU had media observation windows. Now, Utah has only done it once a week during mm-hmm. spring. It's been on Tuesdays. So you've seen a little bit.
Yeah.
But give me your sense. Where do things stand for Utah right now? And we'll get to some audio here in a minute with the backup quarterbacks. But give me your overall sense of where things stand for the Utes.
My overall stance is it feels like they've kind of figured out, for the most part, the things that they wanted to figure out. I think the backup quarterback battle is going to be ongoing into fall camp.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily, like, it could be because it really is just so evenly matched. But I also think there's a little bit of strategy with that as well. And the coaches maybe could know where they're leaning, but you're not going to tell those guys that because you don't want someone to potentially transfer out.
There's this thing called the transfer portal window that opens on April 15th.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be kept under wraps, but at the very least, it feels like either way, they're going to be in good shape on that. But then as far as, you know, the defensive backfield, which I felt like was kind of the biggest hole that mm-hmm. they had to figure out, sounds like they kind of have a good idea of what direction they're going to go and who's going to fill those roles. And so I think overall they've accomplished what they've wanted to accomplish. It sounds like overall health-wise, they're in pretty good shape. They obviously did have
Levani Dumuni.
A big one with Levani Dumuni.
Which sucks, by the way, because that kid's an incredible football player.
Absolutely. I mean, injuries just suck
in
general,
yeah.
Period. That's a lot of work that guys put in to only have it all kind of snatched away. That's always just heartbreaking. I don't care who you cheer for. But outside of that, it sounds like they're in good shape health-wise. So I think they've kind of checked their boxes for spring, and we'll get – and it's so weird because it's going to be a bunch of fluff, but we'll get our biggest taste of what they look like, what they've been working on in that spring game. And we'll just kind of, you know, see where it goes from there. But I think they're in pretty good shape and we're about where they want to be.
Well, that's good to hear. Spring game-wise, BYU didn't have one. Obviously, they were revamping LES. They've got the new turf going down. Mm. And so they ultimately just had that alumni game. And so both Aaron Roderick and Jay Hill, after the final practice, this goes back to last Saturday I was out there, they said that the spring game is fun for fans. Mm-hmm. And essentially said it sucks for us as coaches. Because the point they were making is, okay, A, you don't want to subject anybody to potential injury.
Yeah.
And BYU, trust me, I saw a lot of braces, casts, guys in slings coming out of spring camp. Mm. But they said that none of those are considered to be season ending. They're going to take time this summer to get themselves. And then,
yep.
So BYU was very physical and got away with it. Like they didn't have a Lavonnie DeMooney situation, which that's awful because you don't want to lose guys like that. But Jay Hill said it best because he was a head coach for Weber State for so long. He said, here's the thing. I like having 15 actual practices.
Yeah.
We actually get guys out there, do their thing. And yeah, every so often you may have an open one for mm-hmm. fans. But he said that's more advantageous. You cost yourself one with a spring game where, A, you're trying to hide something because you're not putting anything on film. Mm-hmm. You don't want, because guess what? Opponents are going to tune in and be like, all right, for Utah's case, next Saturday, 11 a.m. Mountain Time. Let's see what Utah's got at quarterback. Like they're going to be scouring for it. So you're going to keep it very vanilla, A.
Yep.
You're holding out a lot of your top talent.
Oh, yeah.
And C, the last thing is, it's like, all right, what ultimately can we accomplish here?
Mm-hmm.
So there's like the give and take of it all. I think that this is just me speaking ahead. I'm assuming next year BYU will have a spring game.
Yeah.
It's become kind of a thing. Now, Kalani Sitake, and we got to get to some audio here real quick, had a very interesting idea, though, Michelle. He said that he would prefer in spring to essentially have it set up where you play 2, 3, 4 games alongside that. Maybe you go play the FCS teams in your state or something like that. I was like, ooh.
I think Kyle Whittingham's mentioned that once or twice in the past.
And Kyle's
too.
Mentioned a similar thing. Yeah. He said that he'd like to have an actual game. Yeah. And I've said this multiple times. You know those FCS games that are like a waste of time in the middle of the regular season?
I think that's a good place for them, actually, is in spring.
You pay them a bunch of money that they're looking for. That's what these FCS teams are in it for, folks. They're called buy games for a reason. They're paid anywhere between, it's about $300,000 to $1 million. It just depends on what the contract calls for. You know what? What you do is you both essentially, you talk, and this is just me, this is never going to happen, even though I wish it would. You talk to that FCS team and say, okay, we're going to start spring camp here. Mm-hmm. You start there as well. We will both go through all of our 15-ish practices, and then on the set Saturday, 3, 4, 5 weeks out, we're getting together, we're playing a game.
Yeah.
You get your money, we play a game, and we get a better feel for how things look coming mm-hmm. out of spring camp. And I'm like, it's absolutely genius.
It is genius.
It's only too smart for the NCAA to actually, you know, go ahead with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe if that whole breakoff thing happens.
Well, yeah, the Super League. We can talk about that, too. That's one other thing.
Yeah. But yeah. No, you're right. As it stands, it's never going to happen, even though it's probably a much better idea and a much better use of everybody's time.
Sure, because you get those schools, like the FCS schools, they get their chance to go up against the big boys, and there's going to be upsets, and people are going to be like, great, guess what? You know what dies down over the summer months? The upset from that, and then you finally get into the regular season, and you can focus on better level competition, mm-hmm. I think, across the board. But going back to the spring game thing, I am expecting, and correct me if I'm wrong here, we don't see Cam Rising next week.
I don't think so. I think he's just going to be there to sign autographs and kiss babies.
That's what I assume. So that leaves the opportunity for his chief backups. And mm-hmm. it's a pretty back and forth battle based on what I've heard mm-hmm. slash what you've been talking about. Brandon Rose, who has been around, this is his third.
This will be his third year
And then Isaac Wilson, hotshot freshman. We all saw what he did at Corner Canyon. His older brother's in the NFL. Like, mm-hmm. guess what? There's a lot riding on the line for both of these guys. So you had a chance to catch up with both of them and talk with them one-on-one. Let's start with the Brandon Rose side of things. We'll give the incumbent, as they say, the first chance. He had some interesting comments, so here you go. Here's Brandon Rose with Michelle.
So, Brandon, year three now for you. Coming off of an injury, you know, how are things going? How's the game kind of changing for you?
I feel a lot more confident and more prepared as I'm going through spring ball, and I feel like I'm picked up right where I left off, you know.
Your coaches have been very complimentary of the progress you've made. You know, what are some things that you've kind of worked on in order to be prepared to possibly take over that backup spot?
I feel like just being more confident in my ability, being able to execute at a high level, get the ball to my playmakers, and just run the offense as a solid unit, as one unit, you know. So.
Injuries can be frustrating. Being sidelined can be frustrating. But what did you kind of learn, you know, watching from the sideline last year?
Just to be patient. God, he's got a plan for everybody, and I feel like I take everything as everything happens for a reason, you know. So I took that, and just you try to make the most of it.
You have a pretty good freshman that's also pushing for that spot, and it sounds like you two are competing really well. How's Isaac kind of helped elevate your game?
I mean, it's always good to we're always competing in the quarterback room, everybody in the room. It's just a great, we all love each other, and it's just great to just compete every day.
Cam is one of the best that's ever done it here. You know, what's it like playing behind a guy like him and getting the opportunity to learn?
It's good. I mean, he helps you learn a lot, see things that you might not have seen, you know. He's a great guy, great leader, and I think just being able to learn from him just can help my game and the IQ standpoint of playing the quarterback position. And, I really feel like he's a great, great guy in the room to have.
Obviously, still very early in the process, but what do you think fans can expect from this team?
Playmakers. There's a bunch of playmakers all over the field. We're just winners. We're going to go win.
We're just winners. We go win. I like that. The confidence there.
I like the confidence there, too. And interestingly enough, when we listened to the Isaac Wilson interview, mm-hmm. said a very similar type of thing about the team. It's like these guys maybe know something about themselves.
Well, and there may or may not be things in team meetings that get preached to them as well. Because trust me, like if I say the term, this BYU fans, I'm going to trigger you real quick. Love and learn. That became like the idea of it is great.
Ooh.
But it got under the skin of BYU fans as things kind of were devolving the last two seasons, especially on defense. We're loving and learning. You know what?
Just stop saying that.
Enough loving and learning. Play better. Like, you know what? It's just part of the deal. It is. And there's a lot of there's these catchphrases, I guess, best way to term them. Guess what? Every program has them.
They do.
And
they do.
They get said to these guys time and time. And it just becomes part of their lingo. And it ends up coming out in media sessions as well. So I am interested with Rose because he had such an interesting thing last year because he gets injured in training camp. Mm-hmm. Fights his way back, and there was, I think I was among the group that thought, okay, with the bowl game being what it is, throw him out there and see what happens.
Yeah.
Opted not to do that for whatever reason, and it's like, okay, when are we actually going to be able to see Brandon Rose do his thing? And that still is up in the air.
Yeah. I mean, we should hopefully get a decent-ish taste in the spring game again. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, it's going to be vanilla. It's going to be a little bit fluffy. But I think, you know, we'll get a pretty good idea of where he's at. And by all accounts, he said it, his coaches have said it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he has really kind of learned and elevated his game through that process, as frustrating as it was.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right, on to contender number two for the number two job at Utah. That's Isaac Wilson. Really has, I think, impressed a lot of people with what he's done early on in his time at Utah. So here you go. Here's his conversation with Michelle.
So, Isaac, you're coming off of a great senior year in high school. Now you're a freshman in college. How's that transition been for you?
I mean, it's been great. I'm working with the team right now, working with Coach Ludwig, and trying to make it through to the next level.
Is it, like, nice? Because now you're not necessarily the center of attention, or is the competitor in you a little bit antsy?
A little bit antsy, but, I mean, I know my position right now. I gotta work behind Cam, get ready, be prepared to go in at any time.
Speaking of Cam, you know, what's it like being able to kind of learn from someone that's one of the best to ever do it here?
I mean, he's a baller, and I just got to take some of his attributes because he's been winning. He's been doing his thing all over Utah. So I gotta follow in those footsteps and probably hopefully do better.
You also have a guy that's a little in front of you in Brandon Rose, maybe remembers a little bit better what it's like to be the new guy on the team. You know, what's it been like kind of working with him and competing with him for that second spot?
I mean, we both want to win. We both very competitive guys, so I just got to get in that film room, learn my stuff. He's been here, so he's got that year on me. But I just got to keep moving forward. We have that little competitive advantage, little relationship, so I'm glad we get to take care of that.
And then obviously you come from a family that knows and understands football from basically every level and direction you possibly could. What have you kind of taken away from your dad and your brothers that have kind of done this before you?
I mean, they've gone through it. They made life easy for me. Zach, Josh, Micah, they're all giving me little tips and tricks of what to do through college, changing and really evolving through the transition of high school to college. And so just having them by my side and having Zach through the football standpoint is really helping me out.
I know it's so early in your process and in your growth as a player, a college player, and I've heard that like you want to kind of blaze your own path, at least as of right now. What does that look like for you?
I'm trying to just fill my own shoes, not trying to listen to all that outside noise, and just like you said, I'm trying to build my own legacy here at Utah, follow behind Cam, some of the greats, and just do my own thing.
And it's also very early in the process for getting ready for the season, but what do you think fans can expect from this team?
Oh, we're going to win a lot this year. I'm going to promise you that. We're going to win a lot this year and years to come from that.
There you go, Isaac Wilson. And I can appreciate him saying, I'm trying to fill my own shoes, because no matter what he does, it's always going to be compared to his brother. And it's
totally
good, bad, or indifferent. It's just what it is. When your brother did what he did at BYU, ends up as the number 2 overall pick in the NFL draft, regardless of you think he was worthy of being drafted, it happened.
Yeah.
It's on the record. So Isaac obviously has to kind of match that in a way and just deal with it. But I appreciate him just, he acknowledges it straight up front. He's like, you know what? You got Zach sitting right there. And you know what I have to do? I got to go out and kind of carve my own path. And that may have been a part of the reason why he went to Utah. He came from Utah legacy family.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's cool to see him. And by the way, he still should be in high school right now.
Yeah.
He's up there at Utah. He's competing. And it's like he's right there in the mix.
I think that just speaks very highly to his work ethic.
Yeah.
And it really does sound like he's just trying to drink everything in, and he's absorbing it really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
For someone that's kind of a first timer here. And getting his feet wet in the college game. And the nice thing for him, and I know he said, like, yeah, I actually am kind of antsy, but, like, the pressure's off on him a little bit because it's Cam's team. It's Cam's team. So unless something happens to Cam, it's not necessarily on Isaac or Brandon Rose to carry things.
Sure.
And that's not to say that you don't prepare or keep yourself ready in case, but, like, I just feel like, especially coming off of the kind of attention that he got as a high school quarterback, it has to be nice to be able to just do your thing, do your prep work, but nobody's like really like on you about,
sure,
you know. So I think that's good for him, even if the competitor in him's like, this is a little hard and different for me. And I think it's worked out well for him. I think ultimately in the long run, I think that's going to be really good for his career. But as you mentioned, it is hard. You're coming off of not only a brother that everybody
sure
knows a lot about, but you also potentially are following in the shoes of one of the greatest quarterbacks to come through. But I will give him, I think he has the perfect amount of like cockiness he'll be fine. He'll be like, it's the perfect balance of, I understand my place, but I'm also very confident in my abilities, that I think whatever happens with him, he'll be fine.
Well, and the other thing about this is Isaac, every time it felt like something, a moment might be too big for him at the high school level, he seemed to rise to it.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Some guys are just like that.
He carries himself with a really good, as you said, like kind of confidence. It's borderline on cockiness,
yeah,
but guess what? Quarterbacks
are cocky.
You gotta be that.
I even like there's the bad cocky kind, mm-hmm, and then there's the good cocky kind. And you can definitely tell the difference between the two. I tend to be friendlier with the, ones that shocker.
I think we all do. But.
Yeah. But I do. I think he walks that line really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of those things. You have to be able to play on that borderline. And yeah, can you overdo it? Sure. But if you don't have it, guess what?
Yeah, you're not going to be successful.
You're not playing that position typically either. So, yeah. All right. We will come back on the other side. We'll get into technical fouls, wrap up hour two of the program, talk about some of the other stuff going on in sports. Coming up at 11 o'clock, you're going to hear from Max Tooley. He will join us to talk about the pre-draft process and his time at BYU. We'll get to all that next right here on The Saturday Show.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You won't feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal file, 69, offense. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
Welcome back to The Saturday Show. It is time now for technical fouls, and I'm not going to lie, I'm very excited for this one. One in particular. Michelle, you've got an incredible one. I already seen the video of it.
It's fantastic. We will have to retweet it out.
Let's start there, though. So explain what happened.
Okay, so obviously the 2024 Paris Olympics are going to take place this summer, and so the headline on this, I'm going to have to for language because I can't say a few words in this, but okay. The headline on this was, what better way to open the swimming and diving venue for the Paris Olympics than slipping on a diving board and falling butt first into the pool in front of the president of France? So what happened is diver Alexis, I think it's Jandard, slipped during a performance attended by the French president, Emmanuel Macron.
Yep.
It's incredible. there's no other way to put it. This poor kid literally slipped,
yep,
hit the board with his butt, and then rolled off the side of it and fell in the pool.
Meanwhile, the other two, there was like three of them that were doing it in like concert.
Yeah.
They weren't very in sync on it. I wonder if they were also like, what just happened here?
I think they were maybe a little distracted, yes. Yeah. But poor guy.
There's going to be a remix of that soon to music,
Oh, please.
No, it's going to be the whole thing. It's going to stop like when he's like, they're going to stop like as he's falling on his rear end. You're probably wondering how I ended up here. Jeez. The River Seine, that runs through the middle of Paris, apparently it's been so polluted for like decades that they're trying to clean it up for this, and there's still some question if it's actually, be safe enough to be in during said Olympics. So
why are we trying to put people in said dirty river?
Who knows? But they said that that's part, like they want to, so people can go enjoy it.
I mean, like,
they're trying to promote all the aspects that Paris has to offer, but it's like, well, is that really an aspect if it hasn't been swimmable for how long?
Sure. Like, I mean, I'm all for environmental friendliness. Like, sure. You should have done this anyway, but yeah. Like, I don't know that keeping it clean, like trying to clean it up and keep it clean while also promoting people then going in it is a great idea.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, Sarah, what do you got for us this week?
So this happened earlier this week, and I'm sure everyone's seen it, but the Chiefs receiver, Rashee Rice, has now been said that he was the one in the Lamborghini driving.
Lamborghini SUV,
Yes.
Yeah.
In Dallas leasing. That caused a 6-vehicle accident. He was racing with another vehicle, a Corvette, and they both fled the scene. And yeah, so his attorney came out and said, confirmed he was the one driving the Lamborghini that got in the accident, and they're still investigating why he left. So that's not a good sign. Not a good look.
Well, and the worst part was, I don't know if you saw, there's some TMZ video that popped up like shortly afterwards. Him and his crew, I guess the best, they're just walking down the on-ramp. Like, it's like, what are you guys doing? Like, come on. You got to stay and exchange information, that type of stuff. Like, and to abandon a Lamborghini SUV of all vehicles? That, come on now. That's a bad, bad look.
Yeah, it's not a good look. Multiple people were injured. Two were sent to the hospital. Yep. And this just does not look great for him and is probably not going to end well.
Yeah, bad, bad deal. All right, let's go to Butte, Montana. How about that? Let me finish up this. Now, Butte is a Butte, if you've ever been to Butte, Montana. I would just say that. But Montana Tech's former associate athletic director, Nicholas Boscher, has pleaded not guilty to 13 drug-related felonies and one misdemeanor in Butte District Court earlier this week. He is accused of receiving illegal drugs by having them delivered to his Butte home through the U.S. Postal Service, according to charging documents. All right. So he has got 6 charges of criminal possession of dangerous drugs with intent to distribute, 4 counts of criminal possession with dangerous drugs, and 2 counts of possession of property subject to criminal forfeiture and 1 misdemeanor count of criminal possession of drug paraphernalia. He has since been terminated by Montana Tech, as you might expect, but he had a package containing about 1,800 pills of MDMA delivered to his Butte home and also had LSD, ketamine, and cocaine in said property, as he is now going to be in trouble. And yeah, so bond. Well, here's the funny thing about this. His bond was originally $500,000. It was dropped to $250,000, but he still remains jailed as of press time. Come on now.
Oh, man.
You're going to have to deliver via the mail.
So many issues there.
Yeah. You know.
Ugh, oh, my.
Government entity delivering illegal drugs that you're going to try and sell. Okay, way to go, dude. And you know what? You were running at least part of an athletic department. That's always good to have. All right. That's pretty fun, though.
I'm speechless. That was quite the rap sheet.
I still can't get over this guy falling off of a...
the diving board. Yeah. I did just post that, by the way. I felt very proud of myself because I said hang it in the Louvre.
Yeah, well.
Keeping with the French theme.
Absolutely. Come on. It should be hung in the Louvre. There's no doubt about that. Also, real quick, just a technical foul on the Oakland Athletics.
Oh, man.
Could have had it all, guys. You could have come here to Salt Lake and had your own little ballpark, but
could have had it all.
You had to go to Sacramento. Oh. They're gonna share Sutter Health Park out there in Sacramento for the next 3 seasons at least. I guess there's some thought Vivek Ranadive, who is the owner of the Sacramento Kings, apparently very close to John Fisher, who's the owner of the A's, and there's some thought that Ranadive's over there like, this thing with Vegas is gonna blow up and we're gonna have the A's stay put in Sacramento. Okay. It's a bet on the future on that. But you wanna share a ballpark when you could have had your own brand spanking new ballpark in Daybreak. It would have been theirs to call home for 3 seasons. But alas, you had to pick Sacktown.
Well, maybe they go and learn. Maybe it'll work out great for them. I don't know.
Here's the thing. The A's, they're
a disaster. They're a disaster.
So best of luck to y'all. We'll see how it all goes. All right. We will come back on the other side. We're going to catch up with BYU linebacker Max Tooley, now preparing for the NFL. Recently was at the Big 12 Pro Day down in Frisco, Texas. Also a long, long time star player for the BYU football program. We'll get some thoughts on him and the Big 12 transition for the Cougars. It's all coming up next right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.